Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Joshua Jones with Federal Defenders of San Diego, and I'm here today on behalf of my client Samuel Frias-Flores. After the Supreme Court's decision in Carachuri-Rosendo, I think that the issues in this case can be resolved looking to language that's been cited in many 13-2060 appeals that this Court has decided already. Essentially, that language says that an immigration judge has the duty to advise a respondent of their eligibility for relief and to provide them with an opportunity to develop the issue. That language has appeared in numerous decisions of this Court, just to name a few: Arrieta, Ortiz-Lopez, Lopez-Rodriguez. The statements made by the immigration judge in this case, each of the parties has attempted to give the statement their own interpretation or their own gloss. But I think that regardless of what interpretation you give the statements of the immigration judge at the deportation proceeding, we result in a due process violation. Specifically, the IJ advised Mr. Frias-Flores that he would deny voluntary departure because of his convictions and make a decision that he be removed and deported to Mexico. It's our position that when the IJ referred to voluntary departure, there were two possibilities. One, that he believed that Mr. Frias-Flores had been convicted of an aggravated felony, as the state of the law at that time was unclear regarding whether two possessions constituted an aggravated felony, in which case he wouldn't be eligible for either type of voluntary departure, and it would be denied as a matter of law, in which case there would be a due process violation. The other option would be that he was referring to post-conclusion voluntary departure, and I think that can be indicated by the fact that at the initial general calling of the hearing, the immigration judge tells the respondents that he will consider them for voluntary departure if they have the resources to depart the country on their own. The BIA and In re Arguelles-Campos indicated that for pre-conclusion voluntary departure, an alien need not show that he has the financial means to depart the United States. I think that's an indication that the IJ in this case was referring to post-conclusion voluntary departure, which Mr. Frias-Flores, we acknowledge, would not have been statutorily eligible for, as he would not have met the moral character requirement. But what that would mean is that he was not advised of pre-conclusion voluntary departure, which he was eligible for as a matter of law and had a plausible claim to. Now, the government's contention is that the immigration judge in this case was, in fact, referring to both pre-conclusion and post-conclusion voluntary departure. However, even if we were to give the immigration judge's statements that interpretation, which I think is contrary to reasonable inferences from the record, I think we would still arrive at a due process violation in this case. The reason for that is the fact that the immigration judge made no inquiry and provided no opportunity whatsoever to develop the issue. And basic fundamental tenets of due process say that the two basic requirements are notice and an opportunity to be heard. If we construe the immigration judge's statements as a reference to pre-conclusion voluntary departure, we're still missing the second part, an opportunity to be heard. In this case, the immigration judge did not even ask Mr. Frias-Flores whether he wanted to apply for pre-conclusion voluntary departure, let alone allow him to develop the positive equities that would inform a judge's discretionary decision whether or not to grant voluntary departure.
This was a mass hearing, is that right?
That's correct. It began as a mass hearing, and then
how many people were there that morning? Do you remember?
I don't remember exactly. I'm certain that it was more than 10 people, just as my recollection of listening to the deportation proceeding. However, the portion in which the immigration judge is addressing Mr. Frias-Flores specifically is when he states that he will deny voluntary departure and does not even inquire of Mr. Frias-Flores whether he has anything to present or any statements that he wishes to make with regard to that inquiry. Now, that would make sense under our interpretation because the immigration judge would either have believed that he was not eligible because he had an aggravated felony or he's not eligible because he couldn't meet the moral character requirements. If we were to give it the interpretation that the government is urging in this case, that would mean that the immigration judge believes that he's eligible for this form of release but is explicitly denying him the opportunity to be heard on whether or not that release should be granted. As this court noted in Campos Granillo, the IJ is required to weigh favorable and unfavorable characteristics or factors that are present in making these discretionary determinations. The fact that the IJ didn't do that in this case tends to show that he was not attempting to exercise discretion, but in fact thought that Mr. Frias-Flores was statutorily barred from the form of relief that he was indicating. The government's second contention in this matter is that Mr. Frias-Flores was not prejudiced by the due process violation if the court were to find that there were a due process violation. I think the record is clear here that Mr. Frias-Flores would have had a plausible claim to have a pre-conclusion voluntary departure granted. Now, there's no disputing that Mr. Frias-Flores did have criminal convictions. The government urges this court to apply what they refer to as the heightened equity standard, that a person would have to show outstanding equities in order to receive relief. However, I think that the case law regarding that standard is somewhat inconsistent, and I think the court most clearly addressed it in a case called El Ramli, forgive my pronunciation, versus INS. And in that case, the court took pains to note that just because there's this heightened standard that can apply, it does not relieve the court of balancing to determine what the person's specific criminal conduct is, and then weighing it against the positive equities. And in this case, Mr. Frias-Flores' convictions, while there are several of them, are all related to simple possession or traffic-related offenses. Now, the government indicates that a single possession conviction could constitute something that would increase the standard that is required. However, I think that's inconsistent. In El Ramli versus INS, this court noted that in response to an inquiry that was made by the Sixth Circuit, the BIA indicated that their idea of a serious drug trafficking offense would be trafficking, which would constitute an aggravated felony under the immigration law. Now, in this case, it's been essentially conceded that Mr. Frias-Flores' conviction is not an aggravated felony, and thus we don't think that an IJ would be likely to apply this heightened equity standard with regard to Mr. Frias-Flores. Also, this court and the BIA have found outstanding equities in many cases that would be similar to Mr. Frias-Flores' case because of his outstanding ties to the United States. He came to the United States when he was 3 years old, lived here for 33 years, had 10 United States citizen children, a United States citizen wife, and before the district court at the time of the deportation proceeding, he had 23 handwritten letters from Mr. Frias-Flores' friends, his wife, his children, all noting how much he contributed to the family and how much of a hardship it would be for him to be removed from the United States. You know, both in matter of Buscemi and matter of Edwards, the BIA found that people who had significantly less equities than Mr. Frias-Flores were able to even meet this higher standard, which I don't even think is quite appropriate to apply in this case. But in those cases, the BIA found that 17 years of residence in the country since the age of 9 was an outstanding equity. In matter of Edwards, they found that 22 years in the United States and 4 United States citizen children were an outstanding equity. So I think Mr. Frias-Flores' case is even stronger than those in BIA cases that have found outstanding equities. Moreover, in the cases that have applied that heightened equity standard, we've been talking about much more serious convictions. In matter of Buscemi, we were talking about a person who had a drug trafficking conviction and a robbery conviction that involved 2 firearms and a person being tied up during the course of the robbery. That person and that individual received a sentence of 3.5 to 7 years. Mr. Frias-Flores' longest sentence was 16 months, and that was the only sentence he received that was over a year, and it was for a simple possession conviction. Similarly, in matter of Edwards, the person had 3 drug trafficking convictions and 3 burglary convictions and was sentenced to 5 years. So I think Mr. Frias-Flores' situation is significantly different from those in cases where this heightened equity standard has been applied, and even in the cases where it has been applied, Mr. Frias-Flores' equities are significantly greater and would warrant that a court could conclude not that he would have received relief, but that merely it's plausible, which is the standard here. And for those reasons, we would ask that you reverse the conviction and remand with instructions to dismiss.
Mr. Jones, was the appellant represented by counsel at that immigration hearing?
No. He was not.
And did he admit during the proceedings that he had the prior?
He did admit. He did admit that he had the prior. That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Paul.
Good morning, Sarah O'Connell for the United States. I have 2 main points, Your Honors. Respectfully, I don't believe this court has jurisdiction to review the exercise of discretion that the immigration judge made in the underlying matter. And second, even if a typical standard and rather than a heightened standard of equities applies to the defendant, the district court had it right when they said there was no plausible way he would have succeeded on this claim. Even if the immigration judge had allowed the defendant to more fully develop the record about the fact that he had 10 children whom he was supposedly supporting in between the time he was serving on the 16 convictions that he earned during the past 8 years, all of his convictions would have outweighed his family ties to the United States.
Well, is that exactly the question? I mean, aren't we simply to ask whether he has a plausible claim? I mean, I don't think there's any way the guy's going to win. That's not
in which case,
my question. Is
my position would be that it's not plausible.
Does he have a plausible claim given, what is it, 10 U.S. citizen children, U.S. citizen spouse, siblings, parents, legal residents, whatever, decent record of supporting the family,
Well, first, I'm not certain those are the facts. I don't believe there is a decent record that he was supporting his family. And second, no, I don't think that there was a plausible claim, nor did the district court. And third, there can be no due process violation where discretionary relief like voluntary departure is denied in any case.
Yeah, but the question here is whether he was even given an opportunity to apply for pre-conclusion voluntary departure.
Well, the immigration judge did tell him that I will consider you for voluntary departure. He did not specify which type of voluntary departure.
But that was after he had already determined that he was deportable.
No, that's not. That's what he said to the immigration judge said this to the entire group.
Oh, to the entire array.
He said, to each person, I will consider you for voluntary departure, but I will deny you if I find that you have a bad criminal record. Then when the defendant individually was before the immigration judge, the judge considered his convictions. He asked him about his length of residence in the United States. He asked him specifically about the possession of methamphetamine conviction. He told the defendant that he could be removed for his drug convictions. And then he told him, well, I will deny you voluntary departure because of your convictions, in the plural. So he exercised his discretion to deny voluntary departure.
It's very tough for me to look back on this and see any exercise of discretion. I mean, I see the result. But you're basically asking us to assume that a decision without any reasoning is an exercise of discretion rather than just an arbitrary call.
The immigration judge considered the defendant's conviction history and his length of residence in the United States and balanced those equities.
I don't see anything in here that suggests that the IJ was even aware of that his wife was a citizen, he had the 10 kids, how long he had been here, what his work history was, or anything else other than the fact of the convictions.
He did ask the defendant when he arrived in the United States, so he was aware of the length
Great.
Of residence.
Great. That just doesn't seem to me to be the most compelling fact. The most compelling fact here that might cause somebody to hesitate here is the fact that he had 10 U.S. citizen children who are prepared to write letters and say, our dad's been a good dad, he's had some struggles, but this is going to be a problem for us. The kids ranged in age from, 2 to 22 at the time they wrote the letters.
It's true that the immigration judge did not ask the defendant about his immediate family ties. He asked about his parental family ties and if his parents lived in the United States. However, given the defendant's criminal history, I think the district court had it right when he said, look at all the time that the defendant has spent in prison during the past 8 years. He was not supporting his 10 children. That would not have outweighed the conviction history in a balancing of the equities.
As I recall, the conviction history actually covered a fairly short span of years. In other words, he had a lot of arrests in a 5 or 6 year.
2000 to 2008.
Right. So we only had a 6 year span. What happened? What's the record say about his history before 2002?
I'm not aware of any convictions before 2000.
What about his work history?
The defendant submitted some Social Security statements showing that during that 8 year period of time, during at least 2 of those years, he did not receive any income at all, most likely because he was imprisoned. During 1 year.
Right, I'm sorry, during which period?
During between 2000 and 2008.
Okay, I want to know about pre 2000. What's his work history before that?
I do not know.
Okay. Do we have any? There's nothing in the record?
There's nothing in the record.
Okay.
However, during the time between his first conviction and his deportation, which would be the year 2000 and 2008, during at least two of those years, the defendant reported no income. During 1 year, he reported $5,000 in income in total. And during 4 years, he reported $13,000 in income in total, or less. So I think the district court was right when he said the defendant's claim that he was supporting 10 children would fail when compared with the conviction history. If the court has no further questions.
I don't think so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Your Honor, just briefly, as I see my time is going to expire, I would refer the court to ER page 17, if that's where the Social Security records are. They do indicate an earnings record from before 2000. And, you know, in 2002, he earned $23,000. In 2001, he earned $12,000, and it goes on. We don't contend that Mr. Frias-Flores was an affluent man. He certainly was struggling to help provide for his family. But I think the letters and the records show that it's plausible that he could receive voluntary departure, as he's a man who was in the United States working and trying to support a family, and that he has shown significant positive qualities. He simply is a drug addict. And that was it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel, both of you, for your argument. And the matter just argued will be submitted.